WBSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Happy Monday to you. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. And of course, we decided to make it as authentic as we could and make the weather a little bit more like Ireland today. So it's wet and raining out there. And keep that in mind as you are putting on your green clothes this morning, which I wore a green shirt, but it was unintentional. I'm never somebody that like dresses up and dresses for the occasion. Usually because I forget, but also because, But today I'm wearing green because I'm wearing a Columbia shirt that repels water. And when I heard how badly it was raining, it's like, let me see if I got one of those water-repellent shirts kicking around. So I grabbed this one, and then as I walked in and saw everybody else was wearing green, I looked down and I said, yeah. Well, I guess I can pretend to be festive, but I'll be celebrating my St. Patrick's Day when I get out of here later, making my corned beef and cabbage in the Instant Pot. Went out and got it yesterday, and lots of folks, I noticed, were making it yesterday because they had the day at home to slow cook it, and I just keep reminding everybody, Instant Pot, the whole thing's done in like 95 minutes. And that's how I'm going to make mine later. And I'll probably have a Guinness with it. And if you are someone who partakes in Guinness, whether on St. Patrick's Day or in general, it's probably one of my go-tos anyway. I like a good stout. But the publication Finance Buzz did some research on how much the average pint of Guinness sells for each year. And no surprise that in 2025, it's as expensive as ever. In 2022, it was $6.71 for the average price. In 2023, it was $6.77. And then in 2024, it was $7.13. And in 2025... the average price for a Guinness in the United States is $7.49, but in Massachusetts, it's even more than that. It's $8.40, the sixth most expensive average price of any state in the U.S. Now, the most it costs is in California, $9.35, and four other states have price of $8.50 or more. Washington, D.C. is $9.10. Virginia is $8.85. Washington State, $8.75. And Nevada, $8.70. The most affordable, West Virginia. It's $5.45 on average. Wyoming, $5.90. So what are some of the reasons why it might cost you so much? Well, it all depends on the taxation. And it all depends on who the distributor is. Now, an important thing to keep in mind, too, is what are they drinking? Are they drinking produced in North America Guinness? Or are they importing the original from Ireland? In Massachusetts, I would not be surprised because we have a high amount of Irish bars if we're not importing in some of those places what they call the foreign Guinness. That's why some places you go to, it tastes a little different, a little better than it does in others. And when you go out to the store today to buy a, I guess you got to buy a six pack of bottles, right? You have your choice. You can get the domestic Guinness or you can get the foreign Guinness, which is closer to what they drink in Ireland. Now, I always get the foreign one, but then again, you know, I don't think it tastes nearly as good in a bottle or in a can as it does straight out of the tap. So whatever you prefer, or if you don't like it at all, as I'm sure many of you do, or as I'm sure many of you don't, I should say. A lot of times when I've gone out with people and I've ordered one, they're like, how can you drink that? Because it's good. I enjoy it very much. I'll get a black and tan now and then too, although don't order that in an Irish bar. I'll get a snake bite. Well, actually, I don't think I've ever gotten a snake bite in a bar. I've made them at home. Which is Guinness and hard cider. Actually, that sounds good. Maybe that'll be what I have tonight. But I'm sure many, many, many folks celebrated St. Patrick's Day over the weekend because on a Monday, it just doesn't work for them. So whether you are just waking up from your celebration now or whether you're planning it tonight, hope that it is a safe and healthy one. Later on this morning, we will be joined by New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo for his weekly appearance on the program. And I want to talk with him about the Boston Globe Spotlight Series that focuses on the New Bedford Police Department. I got to read all three parts over the weekend, as well as the police department's response and Mayor Mitchell's response. I have not listened to the podcast, which I don't know if that's going to bring any more depth to the story or any new information that wasn't in the written articles. I'm sure it's more of just a dramatic recreation of some of the things that are reported on. But I definitely made sure I got caught up on all the written reports. And there's some differences, I think, in the way people are looking at this that are important for the context. So I've heard Barry for the last couple of days that he's been on just be completely dismissive of this entire report, and I think that that's a mistake. I think even in Mayor Mitchell's comments, he acknowledged that this report indicates there's some things that need to be investigated and looked into. So to summarily dismiss it and say, the Globe doesn't know what they're doing, they're just a bunch of liberal hacks, is disingenuous. Because there's a lot that is accused there, and the Boston Globe, say what you will about how you feel about them, they've been around for a long time. They know how to report things. They also know how to create a narrative too. But this is Spotlight. This is the investigative team. This is the team, although not the same individuals, that took down the Catholic Church. And so this is a unit of the newspaper that knows how to dig. And I think in this particular story, they couldn't report the way that they would normally report because they're protecting people. They're protecting sources. So to come on the radio and say, well, they're using, unverified sources. They're using, criminals who are just looking to rat out the police and have a beef with the police. The Globe didn't just decide to write this story a couple of weeks ago and then put it out. They've been working on this for years and have been researching and vetting who it is that they're talking to and vetting the stories that they're told. They're not just taking the word of a criminal informant. And if you read the story with any kind of comprehension, they even say in it that they verified some of the claims against other, with other individuals. So something that the criminal informant may have told them, they verified with former police officers. And Mayor Mitchell characterizes it as saying, well, they're taking the word of criminals and I forget the exact term he used. Let me pull it up. They said, they're taking the word of criminals and basically disgruntled former employees. But that doesn't mean that the two didn't corroborate each other. It doesn't mean that because a person was a criminal, the things they're saying about the police department are untrue. It doesn't mean that because a person is a former employee, that the things that they're saying about the police department aren't true. So to summarily dismiss it, I think, is a mistake. To accept it all 100% on face value is also a mistake. But you can't just continue to dismiss what you don't want to believe and call it fake news. These reporters did not spend the time and the energy and the research and the requests to put together the story they did for you to just dismiss it out of hand. The truth probably lies somewhere in the middle, and certainly the way that Spotlight writes their stories doesn't help. It's not straight reporting. There's dramatic license taken. They will, turn it into prose as opposed to reporting. And that's where they probably lose a lot of people, as you're describing the mist rolling in off the ocean and but that's what they're doing. That's what that style of reporting is. I don't like it. I've never liked it. I don't like reading, early 1900s sports writers and their overly flowery descriptions of what was going on in games. That's just me. Just give me the straight information, the straight facts. If I want prose, I'll read a novel. But I think that kind of served as a barrier in some cases for people to believe it. When you're describing the scene of a police officer forcing his way onto a boat, rousting up some of the crew looking for drugs, and you weren't there, but you're describing, what it looked like, what it smelled like, all of those things, it's people are going to say you're making it up. So I think that there's a lot that needs to be examined as a result of this. And it sounds like from what Mayor Mitchell was saying, they're going to incorporate Jensen Hughes to do that. The renowned law enforcement consulting firm, in Mayor Mitchell's words. Others are calling for it to be a civilian review. Some feel that civilians don't have any place making decisions in law enforcement. I disagree. Civilians are who pay the salaries of those people. But you shouldn't rely exclusively on civilians because they don't know the ins and outs of policing. But I think having some think tank combination of all of those factors is needed. And in a way, people are looking at this and saying, oh, what a disaster this report is for Mayor Mitchell. And while that probably might hold true with people who already were anti-John Mitchell, and there are many people who are, and luckily, I guess, for Mayor Mitchell, they obviously don't go out and vote because he keeps getting reelected. But if there are people who are really rallying for the next police chief to come from the internal ranks, this gives Mayor Mitchell a reason now to want to go outside. So if he had been thinking, I want to get somebody else from somewhere else to bring them in and kind of change things up, change up the culture, but I know that's going to be a hard sell. Well, this might have been the break that he... And I'm not saying that that's what he wants to do, but I'm saying if that's what he was looking to do, this just made that a lot easier. To say we need an outside pair of eyes to come in and take a look at the way that we're doing things here. So while this report might seem disastrous to some, if his hope was to be able to hire outside the department, this just made that job a lot easier. 508-996-0500. Let me take my first break of the morning, and we'll be back in a few moments. And we will talk to you utilizing all of those methods, but right now it is time to go into the newsroom and get all the top stories of the day from Mike Roberts.
The FTC and IRS are warning of text scams. More Gen Zers are becoming first-time home buyers, and layoffs expected at the post office.
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
The Canadian ambassador to the U.S. is insisting the two countries are still close allies despite recent disagreements over trade. Kirsten Hillman told Fox News Sunday that after recent meetings between officials from both countries, she expects some big announcements that will impact the tariffs President Trump plans to impose on Canada next month.
And we understood from them his whole global agenda in this respect. And we talked about how Canada can fit into that.
Meanwhile, on Meet the Press, the Secretary of the Treasury is dismissing concerns about the recent stock market losses following President Trump's tariffs on international goods. Scott Bessent said the president is just correcting the dangerous policies of the Biden administration, insisting that he doesn't expect there to be an economic crisis.
I'm not worried about the markets. Over the long term, if we put good tax policy in place, deregulation, and energy security, the markets will do great.
New data from the Federal Trade Commission shows Americans lost $5.7 billion just last year to investment scams. Scott Carr has more from Washington.
The data shows the majority of those who reported being scammed out of purported investments last year to the agency lost an average of more than $9,000. FTC officials warn scammers often try to create a false sense of urgency surrounding an investment opportunity and often ask for payments through unusual means, such as gift cards.
Meanwhile, tax season is in full swing, and the Better Business Bureau is warning the public to beware of scammers. The latest scam involving a text claiming to be from the IRS that advises the recipient that they qualify for a $1,400 check as part of an economic impact payment rebate. It also contains a link, but don't click it. The BBB says it leads to a fake but convincing IRS website designed to steal personal and financial information. The Department of Education is launching investigations into nearly 50 universities over diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. Lisa Taylor gives us the details.
Some of the schools under investigation include Yale, Duke, MIT, Ohio State, and Arizona State. Most of the investigations are looking into the school's partnerships with the PhD Project, a nonprofit designed to help minorities get business degrees. The investigations come as President Trump has called for DEI practices to come to an end. I'm Lisa Taylor.
The United States Postal Service has announced layoff plans for 10,000 employees. The layoffs are in cooperation with Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. According to a letter sent to Congress last week, Postal Service CEO Louis DeJoy agreed to work with DOGE on downsizing. This is part of the Delivering for America plan, a 10-year project looking to modernize the USPS operations and reach financial sustainability. More Gen Zers are looking to break into the home market. Jim Forbes has more.
Gen Z made up 13% of U.S. home mortgage applications last year. Many Gen Z home buyers are single, but nearly half of the applicants had co-applicants. The analysis also found that Gen Z home ownership was highest in the Midwest for 2024, while more expensive coastal metros lagged behind. I'm Jim Forbes.
WBSM Sports.
The Sox take on the Braves this afternoon at 1:05. The Buffalo Sabres visit the Bruins tonight at 7. Celtics host the Nets tomorrow at 7:30. The field has been set for the 2025 NCAA men's basketball tournament. Auburn took the number one overall seed. Duke, Houston, and Florida, the other three. In NASCAR, Josh Berry got the checkered flag in the Pennzoil 400 in Las Vegas yesterday.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Rain heavy at times with a slight chance of a thunderstorm in here as well. Highs will top out near 58 and the rain doesn't wind down until we get to tonight. For Tuesday, look for partly sunny skies with a high near 57. I'm meteorologist Kelly Bates on New Bedford's News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Mike Roberts, WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station and get breaking news alerts and all of our content with the WBSM app.
On St. Patrick's Day, I'll be playing some Irish bands for you. You'll get your fill of all the traditional Irish music later with Barry. I know he loves playing that stuff, and I do too, but it's just early in the morning is a little bit too early for some people for tin whistles and violins and all that. So, but we will, well, you never know. We might mix a little bit in. 508-996-0500. App chat and open line voicemails on the WBSM app. And one of the things that we can discuss this morning, because I've been talking about it, and someone brought this up last week in app chat, and I don't like when morning radio turns into like a recipe show. I don't even like when I start giving you all my recipes, but I gave you my recipe for the corned beef and cabbage in the Instant Pot because somebody had asked. So this person had sent an app chat message asking for people's tips and tricks when they make their corned beef and cabbage, the things that they add in. So if you want to call in or send in on app chat your little tip or trick, like mine was, you know, putting the squirt of yellow mustard in the water. to help flavor the meat. Other people might use a can of beer. You know, whatever that, you know, little trick might be. Don't call in with your whole recipe, but, you know, if you want to just give us that little tip or trick. 508-996-0500 or app chat or open line voicemails on the WBSM app. And of course, you know, that's how you can reach out for all the topics we'll be discussing today, including getting deeper into this New Bedford police expose by the Boston Globe spotlight team. And we will have City Council President Shane Burgo on in the 8 o'clock hour to discuss that and more. Let's go to the phones, 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
Hey, morning, Tim.
How you doing?
Well, normally I would say happy St. Patrick's Day, but unfortunately, the Lord God Trump has decided, Mike Johnson in Congress have decided to freeze time. So today is really last Thursday, and it will never change, not until Congress is out of power, and hypothetically never. There's a New York Times article came out, Trump and U.S., under GOP, Congress cedes power to Trump. And what Trump, you noticed the other day, he decided to declare a national emergency. And Congress has the ability to oppose that national emergency. So Mike Johnson said that Congress every day shall be last Thursday, and that shall go on until Congress is out. So all of birthdays are canceled. All of St. Patrick's Day is canceled. We are frozen in time, and that means that you don't need to get breakfast anymore. You don't need to get supper anymore because we're still frozen on last Thursday. Yeah, again, it's under GOP, Congress cedes power to Trump, eroding its influence. Rachel Maddow also talked about it last Friday. And this is the Lord God, and Mike Johnson thinks that he's Moses, and he's frozen time.
All right. Well, thank you for the call.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. The idea that we don't have any more birthdays anymore, and that I guess we just don't need to have breakfast anymore.
Well, for some people would be happy not to have another birthday. They want to get older, but they don't want to have to observe it. All right. You have a good day.
Take care.
And if you want to call in, 508-996-0500. I'm going to take my next break here. We will be right back. There's one you probably forgot about. That's The Corrs, a family band out of Ireland who that was their big breakout hit. But they've been around for a while. In fact, some of the family was in the movie The Commitments. We might play some of The Commitments later as well. Great movie if you've never seen it. But The Corrs had been around since the 90s. You know what's weird is that when I read something about a band that broke in the 90s or... Like, if you tell me Soundgarden really broke it big in, say, 1991, maybe 90, but they'd been together since 1983, I think, I'm like, oh, my God, that's so long to have been together, but it's not really in the grand scheme of things. And then, you know, to find out the Corrs had been trying to break it through in the music business since, like, 1990. And then they had that hit in 2000. Like, that's 10 years. That's not a big deal. But 1990 to 2000 seems like forever to me. But that's like saying a band that came together in 2015 is having breakout success now, you'd be like, okay, it's about, you know, seems about the right timeline. Time works weirdly when you've lived through it. But, and speaking of bands breaking it big, if you remember on Friday, we played the Ides of March vehicle because I play that every March 15th because it is the Ides of March. Well, this year I had to do it on the 14th, but I found something out very interesting this weekend as I was posting that up on Facebook on Saturday. I had no idea. The Ides of March were all teenagers when they recorded that song. They were in their late teens. You know, some of them turned 20 by the time it was released, but they were teenagers when they recorded Vehicle. That's amazing. Anyway, 508-996-0500. And as I said, we will have City Council President Shane Burgo with us in the 8 o'clock hour. And we will talk with him about all the council business of the last week. There was a couple of meetings last week. We'll talk about what's coming up this week. We'll talk about, we'll get the latest on what is the situation with the councilors. But primarily, too, I want to get the council president's reaction to the Boston Globe Spotlight series on the New Bedford Police Department. And as I was saying before, that you can't summarily dismiss everything that's in this report. The Boston Globe didn't spend three giant articles. I mean, when I printed them out for everybody because, you know, as Barry was saying, he doesn't have a Globe subscription. Chris reads the Globe, but he reads it, the physical paper version. And so, you know, in order to get this series, you had to have a login. And I couldn't find anybody that had a login or that wanted to share a login or that could send me the text of the article. So I bit the bullet and said, you know what? I'm just going to pay the $4 for a month's worth of access, but I better remember to cancel it because I don't want to pay $7 a week after that. And so what I did is I put it on a PayPal account that I don't keep any money in and that I've never reconnected to another bank account until PayPal realizes that. I get away with using that for things if I forget to cancel, if it auto-renews, it won't charge me anything. But still, I'm going to remember to cancel it because I don't want to keep a subscription to it. There's not enough value in it. In fact, I got an email from the Boston Herald where it was like, I don't know, $3 or no, what was it? I think it was because it was Friday. I think it was $3.14 to get a year's worth of the digital archives of the digital access to the Boston Herald. And I was like, oh, I'm going to jump on that. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? No. Very rarely have I ever gone to the Herald website and not been able to read an article or not been able to get a back article that I wanted. So not necessary. But anyway, so I paid the $4 to get the access, printed it out, and each printed version of the story runs about 20 pages. Size 12 typeface. I don't know what typeface I was using, probably Times New Roman or something. I don't know. Whatever Google Docs defaults to. So we're talking, 60-something pages worth of material. That's almost a book. 60 pages that way would probably come out to about 100 pages of a printed book. Well, I guess I'd be double-sided, so 50 pages. But still, that's a decent amount of copy to produce for you to look at that and say, oh, there's nothing there. There is something there that needs to be looked into, and that's why the mayor is saying they will do that. He's just saying that they're not going to take what the Boston Globe wrote at face value either. Perhaps in the next hour, I'll give you the mayor's response in totality, but you can read it on the city's Facebook page
And also in Barry's article today, Barry has an article where he's very critical of the Globe's reporting. And you can read that at WBSM.com or on the WBSM app. In that, we have embedded the mayor's statement and also linked over to the New Bedford Police For the Record page, in which the police department has posted their very lengthy response to everything that is in the Boston Globe Spotlight report. So we'll talk about some of that coming up in the next hour, just because I don't want to start reading it now when there's only a few moments left in this hour. And then we'll talk about it more with the council president at 8 o'clock. And by the way, I'm working on setting up some pretty fun conversations for you here in the morning. Some guests that will be joining us in the coming weeks. Next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, we'll be joined by former Boston Globe TV critic Matthew Gilbert, who's going to be coming to UMass Dartmouth on the 30th to give a little presentation talking about TV. And he's going to join us to preview that next Tuesday. So that'll be a fun discussion, just discussing some of the greatest television shows of all time and some of the other, you know, kind of future of TV ideas. You know, like what can we look forward to in this new streaming era? And how is that going to change the face of television? And then, of course, we can also discuss the decline of television networks. But I really want to ask him, you know, what is the greatest TV show of all time? Is it The Sopranos? Is it Breaking Bad? Is it The Wire? Those are the three people tend to bring up the most, and we'll get an expert's opinion on that. And then I'm also working to book a guest who is writing a true crime travel guide to New England. And I think that would be a fun discussion to have, although it sounds weird talking about fun when we're talking about true crime, but a lot of people are super into it, and this might make for a great book for them to start on a little journey of deeper investigation, so... I got to take one last break here before the end of the hour. We will be right back.